Last week, we asked you to phone in with your questions about the financial stories that have dominated the news recently. Today, we're going to answer a few of them with the help of David Collender, an economics professor at Middlebury College. He's at the studios of Vermont Public Radio. Welcome, Professor Collender.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Lauren Young, senior writer at Smart Money magazine. She's in our New York bureau.
Hi, John.
Let's start with the question we got most frequently on our call-in line.
Hi, my name is Susan Heilman. I'm calling from Tiburon, California, and I'd like to know where my money actually went.
Well, we presume Susan Heilman is talking about the money she's lost in the stock market in recent months. How would you answer that question, Professor Collender? Has the money gone into someone else's pocket, or has it just vaporized?
Probably the best way to think of it was never there. The evaporation of trillions of dollars of wealth is really just a perception that people have as opposed to wealth being there.
Mm-hmm. But what you're saying basically is the wealth that she thought she had essentially vaporized.
Yes.
Anything to add to that, Lauren Young?
Well, I think David made a really good point. And you hear a lot when people talk about investing that what they're worth on paper. And basically the net worth that we're talking about, the net worth that disappeared, was paper money. It's all paper.
I would add, it isn't even paper. It's just bits in a computer.
All right. Well, let's go to the next question.
My name is David Muniz. I'm calling from San Francisco. And my question is, what does the number mean when you see the Dow having a value of 8409? What is that number? What does it reflect?
Lauren Young, is that something you have on the tip of your tongue?
Absolutely. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is the Dow, a lot of people just call it the Dow, but it's an actual average, it tracks the ups and downs of about 30 blue chip stocks. It's a very complicated math game, and the actual number that you hear every day is based on a formula of the 30 stock prices of major companies like Citigroup, which represents the financial sector, and Microsoft, which represents the technology sector. Now, it can change when a company, for example, leaves the average, or if, for example, they pay some kind of dividend. There's always something changing in the average, and that's why the number itself is a lot higher than the real stock prices that you hear.
Let's go to our next question, this one from Oregon.
This is Louise Farrell. I'm calling from Corvallis, Oregon, and I'd like to know how or why the stock market affects the economy.
That sounds like a good question for you, Professor Collender, professor of economics.
You make it sound like I'm supposed to know this. There's a saying in economics that, you know, sort of the stock market predicts, what, 6 out of the last 2 recessions. So there is some relationship between it, except it's very loose.
Let's go to the next question.
Hi, my name is Kirk Kasky. I am from Madison, Wisconsin. My question is, what are penny stocks? Where can you buy them? And has a penny stock ever gone increased in value to make somebody money?
It sounds like Kirk is shopping for somebody to buy here. Lauren Young, can you answer what are penny stocks? And then maybe talk about whether there's reason to believe other stocks in the market now might be considered good values.
Penny stocks are not, you're not necessarily going to find them listed in the pages of the Wall Street Journal. They're not traded on the exchanges. Remember that there are 7,000 publicly traded, about 7,000 publicly traded companies out there. And when we look at the spectrum of different kinds of stocks, there's the really, really tiny companies. Those are micro caps. And then there's the small companies, there's the medium companies, and then there's the really large ones that everyone can roll off the tip of their tongue, the GEs and Microsofts of the world. So the stock market really is segmented, and different kinds of stocks act differently at different points in economic cycles.
What about stocks that are in the news pages these days, big companies? Are there values out there, do you think? Is it time to buy stocks? And how do you decide what's a good stock to buy and when to buy it?
Is it a good time to buy? It's always a good time to buy. Certainly, prices are a lot cheaper than they were at the beginning of the year. But you do need to have a real goal and a real time horizon in mind. And I'm talking, when I talk about time horizon, 5 years, 10 years. Stocks of the long haul still, if you look at a chart that was done by a company named Ibbotson in Chicago, stocks are the best performing investment over the past 30 years, even despite this recent correction that we've had.
Okay, let's go to our next question.
My name is Bill Johnston, East Lansing, Michigan. Why is no one questioning Wall Street and their rules, not just big business and their finances.
Well, chief executive officers and accountants are certainly under scrutiny now, but I think Wall Street and the action of stock analysts has also come under close scrutiny in the past months. Wouldn't you agree with that, Lauren Young?
Absolutely. I think certainly the Securities and Exchange Commission, which really is the governing body for Wall Street, they basically oversee the entire securities industry. The SEC's website is a great place to get a lot of information about what's going on with different companies, but it's more of a clearinghouse than actual, you're not going to find out, you know, what they're looking at and why.
Anything to add to that, Professor Colander?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is more different agencies starting to go after Wall Street, looking at what's going on. I think just recently there's been questions about J.P. Morgan and Citicorp, what they knew about Enron's accounting system before, and people will start investigating that. Given what has happened, there's a lot of interest in politicians respond to that.
All right. Let's go on here, move on to our next question.
Hi, my name is Vernon Jeffries. I'm calling from Oakton, Virginia, in the D.C. area. What are stock options?
Professor Colander, can you give us the simplest description you can about how stock options work?
A stock option is simply the right to buy something. Say when you come in and you start working for this company, it says, the shares are now selling for $10. We'll give you an option to buy, say, within the next 2 years at $15. Now, clearly, if the stock is still selling for $10, that option isn't worth a lot. But if the stock goes up to $20 and you can buy it at $15, you have a big gain and a reason to do that. So stock options are used to make the CEOs or whatever employees incentive to be the same to see that the price is high, which they assume is what the stockholders want. Now, the problem with stock options come, you know, sort of, it gives almost too much of an incentive to the CEOs to see that the stock price is high. And then they can say, okay, I've just got to get it high so I can sell and get out, even though the true valuation, if people knew what the situation at the company was, would not be that high.
And that's what we've seen in so many companies over the last few months, that executives were working to try to get the stock price very high, and they might have done that with poor or even illegal accounting practices. Let's go on to our next question.
Hi, my name is Edith Macker. I'm calling from Hingham, Massachusetts. And my question is about any legal recourse from stockholders, common investors, little people who own mutual funds against the most recent dishonest corporate officials with WorldCom, et cetera, Enron, who have essentially been responsible for the serious downturn in the stock market.
Lauren Young, do you have an answer for Edith?
I think the question she's asking is what kind of recourse investors have. We've seen more lawsuits against some of the big investment banks, for example, Merrill Lynch, some investors suing Henry Blodgett, who was their technology analyst, and people now suing Jack Grubman, who is a telecom analyst at Salomon Smith Barnard, at least talking about it. So certainly people think that they can sue, and that might be a good way to get back some of their money. Keep in mind that when you are an investor and you buy stock, on the food chain of if a company goes bankrupt, stockholders are the bottom. And you know that when you go in and buy a stock. So I don't think that we're going to see a huge wave of shareholder lawsuits, but I do think we'll see some of them.
Mm-hmm. And after all, shareholders are actually owners of the company. So if they want to sue the company because the share price had fallen, they're actually suing themselves or, suing the other shareholders.
I think the one place where you will see some suits actually getting some money is not suing the company, but suing the firms that touted the stock even when they knew the information was bad. And I suspect, as a practical matter, people would lose that lawsuit, but the companies, you know, just don't want that to come out, that they had done that as much, and might settle to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go now to a question from a listener in Los Angeles.
My name is Paul Brown, and I'm in Los Angeles, California. Calling because I have a bunch of MCI WorldCom calling cards I bought as a multi-pack from Costco a while back. They're still working now, but I'm wondering, will they continue work in the future, as I paid $50 for the whole pack? They're a good deal, but I guess hope WorldCom keeps supporting them. That's my question.
I think a lot of folks who might have MCI as their long-distance company or have calling cards like Paul Brown's are wondering the same thing. What's the answer, Dr. Collender? What happens when a company like WorldCom goes into bankruptcy and they've got these services they're providing?
Bankruptcy is a financial issue. They can continue operating, and I expect they will continue operating, you know, sort of because they still have value. They're playing a very important role in the economy. And so what they try and do with a bankruptcy is to allow the company to sort of reorganize its finances so it can continue on.
Companies operate in bankruptcy all the time. You can still shop at Kmart even though they filed for bankruptcy. And Macy's had filed for bankruptcy in the 80s. Texaco, you could still buy gas there when they filed for bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to our next question.
Yeah, I'm John Clark from Houston. How far does the stock have to fall to be considered a crash?
I guess another way of putting it is, how bad is it? Dr. Collender?
There's no one answer to it, but the general rule of thumb is if the stock market goes down 20%, they call that a bear market. What a crash is, it depends on whether the stocks you hold or not are there. I've never heard the term crash described for an individual stock.
Crashes generally occur when we've seen a loss of confidence, and that's what we have right now. And they usually follow periods of highly inflated stock prices, which is what we have right now. And certainly the crisis of confidence is a crash because people loved corporate America. They loved their stocks. They loved the internet. They loved all those things. They loved technology, and they hate it now. That's a crash.
I think whether to describe it as a crash or a balloon popping, if you have a set of prices that are far beyond what is supportable, and most economists felt that was the case with the stock market before, you needed it to come down to reflect closer to fundamentals. And that's what the movement has been.
Well, thanks to both of you, David Collender, economics professor at Middlebury College, and Lauren Young, senior writer at Smart Money Magazine.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.